Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Drones. Drones in the battlefield. We first saw a significant effect from the conflict between Azerbaijan and Turkey and Armenia and Russia in a contest in late 2020 called Nagorno-Karabakh. The reports were incomplete, but they suggested that there were new and old types of drones that were highly effective against the Armenian/Russian armor, a battle that tipped towards the Azerbaijan-Turkey way. And the celebration afterwards talked about this new drone technology, especially killer drones or dive bomber drones. But drones of all flavor now are commonplace in the reporting from Ukraine conflict. And I welcome Patrick Tucker, the technology editor for Defense One, to take us into the thinking at the United States Army, the U.S. military, and drones now underway called Counter UAS. Drones are a problem, and stopping drones from the enemy are a problem. Patrick, a very good evening to you. What is the latest thinking for the military, for the combat troops, and drones? Are they prepared for what they're learning from Ukraine? Good evening to you.
Good evening. So, yes, Major General Sean Gainey, who runs the Army's joint CUAS counter unmanned aerial vehicle office, he's talked about how the U.S. military is going to need to scale up the ability of distributed expeditionary units to detect and to thwart drones. And that means basically that the expectations that the military had about future drone warfare, he's acknowledged this. They mostly came out of the U.S. military experience in the Middle East, where U.S. had, of course, complete air superiority, control of the skies over Afghanistan, Iraq, obviously, Syria. And so you saw some hobbyists, ISIS at one point, begin to use drones for some very limited reconnaissance activity. But now we're seeing that really any force can outfit a small, purchasable from Amazon or Alibaba drone with a munition and use it to shape the battlefield. And so one of the things that they're walking away from at the U.S. military is a sense that they have to be able to distribute counter drone technology. These are take a lot of different forms. You've got electronic warfare. You've got, in many ways, lasers, which are already deployed in some settings, microwave guns, et cetera. They have to be much closer to the tactical edge as opposed to where the military thought they would need them, which is guarding big installations for sort of like rogue things like that. The military has decided that they definitely need these at forward operating bases. They need these much more distributed, these counter-drone technologies, because this is going to be the main threat that expeditionary units are dealing with, is this threat of very small drones in addition to, and this is another point that he makes, in addition to very big drones. So when you're dealing with a military that has some sophistication like Russia or China, and we're now seeing Ukraine, but really more and more militaries are also using kind of these medium-sized drones. They're smaller than a Predator. They're bigger than the DJI Phantom that your nephew or niece got for Christmas. They're kind of in between. They have like the wingspan of maybe a Volkswagen as opposed to a Predator, which is about as big as a bus, the wingspan. And because they don't need the same sort of satellite guidance that the U.S. used for Predator and Reaper drones, where we could steer them from literally across the globe, these medium-sized drones that have real firepower on them are an incredible potential threat for units. So an example of that, just look to Crimea, the Ukraine strikes on Russian military installations in Crimea, Sevastopol, the airbase at Secha. A lot of speculation about what caused that. We know at least one of those was caused by a drone the Ukrainian military bought off Alibaba for about $8,000. And it's one of these medium-sized drones and really took out 8 planes. So the drone problem is more proliferated, and it's a little bit bigger than the U.S. military was anticipating. And that's what Gamey is now trying to help the Army to prep against.
I learned from you that the Army is looking at laser and microwave guns and hunter drones. Let's start with laser and microwave guns. Have these existed before and they're adapting them to drones, or is this something all new?
Well, the U.S. military invested big in lasers for a couple of reasons, but one of them, yes, is this threat of drones. We have one laser gun that was deployed on the USS Ponce. And the thinking was that, hey, every time a drone appears over the horizon, you can't shoot a Patriot missile at it. That's the economy is a scale, meaning that your force is going to lose. So the thinking was that lasers are about $1 a shot. So the deployment so far has been really limited. They need to scale those up. They understand that. And the key is to make sure that you have the power to actually run them. The U.S. Army has a truck that is now sending out into the field that has a laser on it. So basically a truck laser specifically for drones. And they're experimenting a lot with a lot of other means. There's these sort of like rifles that shoot microwaves. The range on them isn't quite where they want them to be, and certainly not as effective against these larger Type 2 drones. So they really need to work with this wide variety of things. But some of these technologies have been around, just not deployed in any big way yet. And that's going to change soon.
Yes, you note that the idea here is for the Army to have a counter drone capabilities in 2 divisions of the U.S. Army. So that rises to scale. Let's move to the other side of the battlefield in Ukraine and in Nagorno-Karabakh, the Russians. You note in your reporting that Russia is now using conscripts, convicts, everybody to the front line, even drone hobbyists. What are the Russians demonstrating in their use of drones? What are we learning from their misuse of drones?
Right. Well, this is a sort of an interesting and I think a telling piece of information that came out of Russia, where they have opened a center in Donetsk to basically take non-military folks that are kind of good with drones, basically people that play with like DJI Phantom drones as a hobby, and teach them how to use those in the context of warfare. Because one thing that we're learning is that as effective as drones were for the Russians in 2014, that asymmetry is completely vanished. It's now Ukraine that's using them to much greater effect. Russia, we know, losing a good amount of their medium-sized drones that we were talking about, the Orlan 10s, can drop pretty big bombs, losing a lot of these small tactical drones. But the other thing that we're learning from open source footage that's emerging, and even from Russian trainers that are griping on Russian media about this, is that the operational security, just the training and discipline of a lot of the Russian forces that are using these small tactical drones, it's just not there. And what winds up happening is they wind up losing the drones with sometimes intelligence on them that the Ukrainians pick up, and then they can find the base, they can find the location. They wind up not using the not hiding the signal for steering. They wind up using GPS or other thing, or GLONASS, other signals that can be picked up. Ukrainians finding that signal, using it for targeting, and visiting upon the drone operator a mighty headache. So the tactics and the operational techniques that you would use in war if you're using one of these drones, very different from if you're a hobbyist, but Russia's so kind of desperate for folks to use as essentially cannon fodder that it's going to take anybody that it can find and give them some sense of how to use these things operationally, and then kind of shove them into the maw of battle. And I think it's really telling the way they're just going through equipment, going through drones, the advantage that they had in 2014 lost, and now they're just seriously pulling from the dregs of society, including a lot of prisoners, a lot of kids just out of school that are conscripts, really anybody they can find. And in one instance, just folks that use drones as a hobby, sometimes in their 60s or 70s, and trying to teach them how to use them for purposes of invading Ukraine. And it seems like it's not going to be successful, but that's very much the trend so far.
I learned from you that drones introduce a serious psychological pressure to the battlefields for both sides. Clearly for the side that is defending, if drones appear overhead, have you been spotted? Is it going to drop a grenade on you? But also for the people who are, for the Russians who are using drones, because drone signals, you report, can be jammed or hijacked to reveal the location of the operator. That would be like counter battery fire. If you're using a drone, you're a target.
Exactly. And this is something that, so jamming drones won't reveal the location of the sender, but new technologies do allow for operators on the other side to pick up the signal and actually detect and steer the drone. Kind of actually hijack it. So there's a lot of new techniques to take control of a drone. But the psychological aspect of this is fascinating. If you talk to folks that were fighting in Ukraine on the Ukrainian side in 2014 and 15, they would say that Russian drones were indeed a psychological menace. You had about 5 minutes between when you saw a drone overhead, then from there to when your position was going to receive fire. They knew that, and they would scatter. You saw the Russians use drones to tremendous effect to take out entire tank battalions. That entire phenomenon is now flipped, where you have Russian forces dug in places around Kherson and other spots. And they're beginning to realize that when you see drones overhead from the opposing side, they could be armed, they could easily be armed, or they could be scouting their position to help target longer range, much bigger fire. So you're not sure exactly how you're going to be hit, but your position is no longer safe. And if, like a lot of these Russians are now and will be in the coming months, boxed in a smaller and smaller area to defend, that's going to induce panic. So this is something that these Russian trainers are now openly complaining about in Russian media, saying that it's a huge problem. And just the fact that story is getting out there, you have to imagine that it's a larger problem than they're acknowledging. If it's so big that it's now coming out of highly censored, highly scrutinized Russian media.
You mentioned what we know about the battle space, which is fog of war. However, there are reports consistently that the Ukrainians, with their NATO informants, are now targeting not necessarily Russian frontline troops, but Russian logistics. And I can suppose that drones are very successful in cutting off supply lines or interrupting what you'd say is the confidence that the Russian troops are going to be fed and find fuel to continue their offensive. So drones lend themselves very much not to guerrilla warfare, but to counter logistical warfare. Is that the thinking, Patrick?
Yeah. So this is a piece I wrote last week on the counteroffensive, just as it was beginning to take shape. A lot of people have very big expectations for what the Ukrainian counteroffensive to reclaim some of that stolen territory is going to look like. But what we do know is that the Ukrainians so far have been really good at figuring out where those supply routes are, where those support routes are that are feeding food, but also supplies to those Russian frontline troops. And everything that you're seeing right now with these attacks on Russian installations on Crimea, a lot of the attacks going on around Kherson, especially related to bridge crossings and things like that. The objective is to soften up that territory so that the Russians that are there come November, December, when it starts to get really cold, are going to have a harder and harder time getting their supplies. So your expectations for what this Ukrainian counteroffensive should look like, be patient is the message I received from a lot of folks that are in touch with the Ukrainian military, U.S. analysts that are watching this very closely. Be patient. The objective here is to really kind of isolate them and starve them out in some of these positions. And yes, absolutely. Drones are going to be really helpful there because your supply lines, your logistics lines, they can't be as guarded as your front lines. And the Ukrainians are using them to great effect. to target some of these back lines. Once you isolate them, once you get them stuck in positions outside of Kherson and other places, then they're faced with the only prospect of retreating or absolutely being decimated, especially if they're, they've been stuck in one spot a long time, they're hungry, they're not getting the supplies the way they need. So, absolutely be patient with your expectations about this counteroffensive. The goal in many ways, according to people that I've talked to, is to make that winter for the Russian troops in Ukraine just as hard as could be. And that's when you'll see this tide begin to really turn.
Patrick Tucker, technology editor, Defense One. Battlefield of the present, drones, drones, drones. We turn to the battlefield of the future. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Lost Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.